community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose events can be found through the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's all one word, maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wing sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Wing series producer.
Hello, it's me, E. Yeah, that's right. This is Question Mark of Question Mark and the Mysterians, and you are listening to CKUT.
Yeah, all night long, a 96 year. Cry, cry, cry. Come on, baby, let me hear you cry now. All night long, a 96.
Prison Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show every other week on Tuesdays between 6 and 7 p.m. To get involved with Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Yes, rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means.
Do you?
It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number, you weren't a name, you want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Yasmin, and I'll be your host for today. We would like to acknowledge that CKUT is located on unceded Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabeg and Abenaki territories. The Gunyagahaga Nation is recognized as the custodians of the lands and waters on which we gather today. Jajaki, Montreal, is historically known as a gathering place for many First Nations. We would also like to acknowledge the mass incarceration of the so-called Canada of Indigenous peoples into prisons and jails across their respective ancestral territories and reserves, often far away and isolated from their communities, culture, language, and people. And this includes First Nations, Inuit, and Métis communities. Today, it is home to a diverse population of Indigenous and other peoples. We respect the continued connections with the past, present, and future in our ongoing relationships with Indigenous and other peoples within the Montreal community. Today's show continues our spotlight on the series, on the struggle for the liberation of Palestine on Prison Radio Show. Today's episode focuses on the interaction between Palestine solidarity marches in Ottawa, where people are protesting the ongoing genocide that Israel is perpetrating in Gaza, and the interplay with the police and law enforcement and the bylaw against megaphones, which is unprecedented. And on today's show, we feature an interview with documentary filmmakers of the People United, which will air this week on Saturday, April 27th at 10 p.m. EST on PBS. And if you can't tune in then to watch it, you can always find it on the Algonquin College YouTube channel because it'll be featured there as well. Before we get started with the interview, I wanted to just give an update that I received, Prison Radio has received from Ra'id Amer, who is the president of the Palestinian Prisoner Society that we had on last show here on Prison Radio, coming to us straight from Nablus in occupied West Bank. They occupied Palestinian territories of the West Bank, and Nablus is the city. So there's a summary of the arrest campaign data, and that's from October 7th until today. So... the summary includes data of those arrested from the West Bank while detainees from Gaza remain subjected to enforced disappearance. The total number of arrests in the West Bank, including Jerusalem, exceed 8,425 women. The total number of female arrests is around 280. This includes women arrested from the territories occupied in 1948 and cases of women from Gaza and arrested from the West Bank. Children, the number of child arrests is approximately 540. Journalists, the number of journalist arrests after October 7th is 66. 45 of them remain detained, with 23 transferred to administrative detention. Administrative detention orders. After October 7th, there were over 5,210 administrative detention orders issued, including new and renewed orders, some targeting children and women. The ongoing arrest campaigns since October 7th have been accompanied by escalating crimes and violations, including brutal beatings, threats against detainees and their families, widespread destruction of homes, confiscation of vehicles, confiscation of money and gold, and extensive infrastructure destruction, particularly in the camps of Tulkarm, Jenin, and their surroundings. These arrest campaigns encompass those detained from homes, military checkpoints, those who surrendered under pressure, and those held as hostages. Additionally, during those arrest campaigns, Israeli forces carried out extrajudicial killings, including individuals from the families of detainees. At least 16 prisoners have died in Israeli prisons and camps after October 7th, including Omar Zragba from Tubas, Arafat Hamdan from Ramallah, Majid Zakul from Gaza, and a fourth martyr whose identity is unknown, Abdul Rahman Mari from Salfit, Tayyar Abu Asib from Kalkilia, Abdul Rahman al-Bahesh from Nablus, Muhammad al-Sabar from Hebron, also known as Khalil, Khalid al-Awish from Tubas, Iz ad-Din al-Bana from Gaza, Asif Rafay from Ramallah, Ahmed Rizq Kadi, Juma Abu Ghanima, Walid Daka, Abdul Rahman Amr. In addition to the injured prisoner, Muhammad Abu Sinaina from Jerusalem that passed away in February in Hadassah Hospital after he was injured and arrested on the same day. It should be noted, all Israeli media has disclosed data indicating the deaths of other detainees from Gaza and the Sidi Taiman camp in Beersheba. Recently, the occupation also revealed the deaths of 27 detainees from Gaza. The occupation continues to refuse to disclose any information regarding the fate of Gaza detainees. Additionally, the occupation has admitted to the execution of one Gaza detainee, along with other indications pointing to further executions. The data related to arrest cases includes those still held by the occupation and those later released later. These data do not include any figures regarding the number of arrests from Gaza, as the occupation continues to refuse to disclose them and enforces enforced and disappearances against them, estimated to be in the thousands. It should be noted that the occupation has detained hundreds of Gaza workers in the West Bank, along with Gaza citizens who were present in the West Bank for medical treatment. The total prisoner numbers as of the end of March, the total number of prisoners exceeded 9,500, including over 3,660 administrative detainees and 849 categorized as illegal combatants from Gaza. These numbers are available only as clear data from the Israeli Prison Service. Prisoner institutions, the Ministry of Detainees and Ex-Detainees Affairs, the Palestinian Prisoners Club Association, Ad Amir Institution for Prisoner Support and Human Rights. There's some infographics that we might be able to put up on our Prison Radio Show Twitter. So today on Prison Radio Show, I want to welcome the documentary filmmakers of the new documentary called The People United. And we have Rama Al-Zubi and Garrett Spafford with us for the show today. And I'll tell you a little bit about them. Rama is an 18-year-old Canadian-Palestinian. She's passionate about bringing people's stories to life through film. Rama aims to create a film in Palestine, and this project is the first step. And Garrett is a 22-year-old Algonquin film and media student with experience in theater, writing, prop design, set design, and videography. And I'll let you both take it away. So Rama, do you want to introduce yourself? And Garrett, you can also add in a few words about yourself.
Yeah, and I do want to mention, like, Isha was also part of our team. She just can't make it today, but she was our DOP and / editor. So I'm Rama. We're all Algonquin film students, and this project was with Algonquin, but we all had to like pitch in ideas, and luckily my idea got picked. So,
and are you talking about Algonquin College, like Algonquin School?
Algonquin College, yeah.
Okay, just wanted to get that clear. That you weren't saying you're part of the Algonquin like nation, but you're
sorry.
okay, cool.
And I'm Garrett Spafford. I'm just happy to be here, and I'm excited to get to talk about this because I'm pretty proud and pretty excited.
First time we're both on a radio show, so it's exciting for us.
Okay, well, that's awesome. So let's talk about the film. How did you come up with this idea? And can you tell our listeners a little bit about what the film is about and when it's going to air? I know it's going to air this week. Can you do a plug for that?
Mm-hmm. It's going to air Friday, April 27th, like 10 p.m. Eastern time. Yeah. It's going to air on PBS. And if you don't have PBS, it's going to be on the Algonquin College YouTube channel too. So there's that as well. And the way I came up with the idea, like I just, when the Algonquin professors were like, oh, you're going to make documentaries in January, like they told us this in January, I was like, immediately, I wanted to make it about Palestine. Because it's all, especially after like what's happening, it's all anyone can think about. And it's, again, like you said in the beginning, my dream is to make a film about Palestine in Palestine as like a successful filmmaker in the future. So making a documentary that's going to air on PBS is like the first step. And it's a really big deal. Like more people should talk about it. And I honestly, I just wanted to make anything Palestinian related.
That's great. And Garrett, how did you get involved in the documentary?
Well, I was talking to Rama, and basically the energy, like talking about it, got me excited for it. Hearing about like what's going on, I want to do something. I want to not just be apathetic to such a crisis. And just hearing somebody so passionate about it and so like so ready to make something like this, just I knew I had to be a part of it.
That's great. And we know that you have a third person on your team, like you mentioned, right?
Yeah. Garrett is he actually also was gonna have something on air as well, but because he was so interested in the cause and in the documentary, he just adopted him in our team.
Well, that's great.
So you worked on two projects at the same time.
Wow, that's amazing. Kudos to you, Garrett. Very cool. So I know that on the website, it says that the People United is about, in the About section, it says, since December 23rd, Baila has been ticketing protesters for using megaphones. And in response, the community banded together immediately, establishing the Community Defense Fund to cover legal fees. And do you want to just continue from there? Like, how did you decide to focus on this issue? Like, were you going to the, and you're talking, and this is, you know, focusing on the solidarity protest for Palestine, right? For the, to highlight and to protest against the genocide in Gaza perpetrated by Israel. Yeah. Okay. So how did you, were you both participating in those protests? And is this how you sort of developed interest in this topic? Or how did this topic of the bylaw come to you? Because on Prison Radio, we highlight mostly stories about prisoners and those inside. And so we've been focusing on the Palestinian cause and on Palestinians that are, we just started focusing on the mass incarceration of Palestinians in prisons in Israel. And I felt like this was a related topic because it also has to do with solidarity for prisoners in Palestine and for those being killed in the genocide. And so I felt like this was a good topic on connecting those systems of law and enforcement and how those impact our ability to have free speech and to do the things that we need to do, like protest. And so, how did this issue about the bylaw come up and with the megaphones?
Yeah.
Tell our listeners a little bit about what's been going on.
So, like I said, I knew immediately I wanted to make it about Palestine, but there's so much you can talk about Palestine. And I wanted to make it about my family at first, but they live in Jordan. I can't make a documentary about them. And so I went to the protest to, of course, protest, but to also like get more ideas and to meet people and things like that. And I was like, that's when I learned that like they've been ticketing protesters $500 tickets, by the way, for using megaphones, which is absolutely ridiculous. And when you're, like, for example, there was a convoy protest not too long afterwards, and they didn't ticket them because it was not safe for the police officers. That doesn't make any sense to me, honestly. So I don't know. Like, at first I wanted to make it like the behind the scenes of organizing, but there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes and a lot of it is private. So I thought, you know, what about the community? That's something that not a lot of people talk about, because when people think of Palestinian protests or protests in general, but especially Palestinian protests, they just think like they're angry, but they don't think they're angry for good reason. They just think they're angry because they're Arab, you know? So it's, I mean, like, these people are human, and there's a big, you know, it's a humanitarian like movement that's a lot of people like seem to ignore. So I wanted to highlight the people behind it and humanize these people. So, yeah.
That's great. And so I know that in the film you focus on a few different people. Can you tell us how you decided to focus on like the protester, the artist, and I think there's someone kind of an anonymous organizer. So how did you decide to focus on those three profiles? What was it about those three? Because maybe you had more like to choose from. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about that process of like whittling it down to three, or did you always know that when you met them, that, okay, this person has to be in the documentary?
It's a little different each person. So I forgot to mention, I had so many ideas for the documentary. Like, I wanted to make it about like various organizations in Ottawa and like things like that. Like, I was just brainstorming for ages. But like, it for an 8-minute documentary, various organizations is just too much. So I contacted a bunch of organizations for like some ideas, and Anek Bayan, which is a Filipino organization, they're international organization, so all over. And they contacted me back, and they work with Palestinian organizations. And they were really interested in my documentary. So I met with some of them, and one of them is the actual, like, that I met with is the anonymous organizer. And originally they were like, yeah, I can't interview, things like that, because they could lose their job, you know? And I tried, they like told me like, oh, you should meet with this person, you should meet with that person. Like, it's just really a word of mouth situation. And the more I started showing up to these protests, the more I met people, I met like the photographers there. And then because I'm also a photographer, so we just started talking, we started hanging out. And then I met more organizers through them. So I just kept meeting more and more people. It's just that the Palestinian organizers are so insanely busy right now that eventually, like, I guess one of the anonymous organizer was like, you know what? I'll do it. And I was like, okay. In terms of the protester, it kind of just happened. Like, I was in the middle of a protest. Like, it was the first one I went to in a while. And it's where you're going to see a lot of like the police shots and things like that. It's like where all the ticketing happened. It's where I first learned. And I was like, okay, yeah, I need to do the documentary about this. And she complimented, her name's Tara, very nice. And she complimented like my camera and my hair. And she was like, oh, like, what are you doing? It's like, yeah, I'm making a documentary. I'm just struggling to find people like to interview. She's like, I'll do it. And I was like, okay. It was really easy. And in terms of the artist, again, like word of mouth situation, I just kept meeting more and more people, and eventually it led to the artist. And yeah.
Right. And so in the artist, so can you talk a little bit about the artist? Like, so in the documentary, there's some clips with her talking about her art and how she was feeling about what was going on and how she wanted to contribute something. So what does she do with her art? Can you talk a little bit about that and how that's used for the cause?
Yeah. So because of like the ongoing ticketing, it's been going on since December 23rd, they established the Community Defense Fund, not to pay for the tickets, but to pay for the legal fees to fight back against the tickets, because they're not going to just take it. So they do so by, you know, having like art shows, you know, they'll have like auctions, and Hiba wants to, like, that's her name. She wants to like help the local community and essentially like help with the cause in some way. Kind of like us with the documentary, we want to help in the cause in some way. So she donates her art to the auctions, and that money goes towards the Community Defense Fund.
Okay, so thanks for that about the artist. That's not, that I was really moved by that she was making art to auction. And so, how many tickets have been issued? Like you're saying, they're $500 a pop.
I have no idea, but it's a lot. It's honestly like they're so funny about it. Like they'll have like signs with the tickets like stapled onto them. They'll be like, it'll be like, fuck you, Viola. And it's just like stapled onto like all the tickets and everything.
Like, when did the bylaw come into effect?
It's December 23rd, yeah.
December 23rd. And this hasn't been in effect for any other group?
It hasn't, yeah. The ticketing hasn't been happening for any other group. It only started in December with the Palestinian protests. Like I said earlier, with like convoy happened again for like a little bit in Ottawa this year, and they like posted on Twitter like, oh, we're not going to ticket them for safety reasons, like for the police officer's safety.
That's really unfair application of this bylaw. It's like that's yeah, I think there's some so they're challenged.
They've really shown their true colors.
Yeah, and I think there's if they actually come out and said that, I think there's a way to challenge that too, because that's an unfair application of the law, right? You can't have a law and then apply it to people differently. Like, you need to apply it to everyone in the same way. That's why we have laws. Mm-hmm. It's the system that we're supposed to be having, right?
Yeah.
Do you know if they're challenging that? Has that come up at all in any?
Yeah, like they're paying for. So like I said, like the auction. It's to help pay for the legal fees. So like they're taking them to court essentially, because they're not just going to take it. They're not going to keep paying for it. It's just straight to court. We're going to fight back.
Do you think you'll do a part two and focus on what happens with the challenges?
Maybe. I mean, I'm not going to stop going to this protest once I'm like, we're done the documentary, but like, we're going to keep showing up and, honestly, like, I'm kind of glad the documentary's over, so now I can do more creative work and, like, take photos instead of, I love video, but I need a break from video from doing this, like, documentary for months. I just want to take some photos, and maybe I can, you know, like, we're still, there's a whole photography group that's there, and we, like, they photograph and video everything that happens with all these, like, there's been a lot of, like, police brutality that happens at the Palestinian protests. And
can you talk about that a little bit? Do you guys want to expand on that? When you say there's been a lot of police brutality, what do you mean?
It's like there's like one clip where in the documentary where someone's saying like someone elbowed, like a police officer elbowed a girl in the face. And I couldn't put the video in because I didn't take the video. And so I needed to get like a material release and everything, and I didn't have the access to that. But it happened. And it's happened again and again, where like they're shoving people, they're pushing people. And it's happened a lot in Toronto, mostly. Nobody talks about it. It's happened in the big cities, but it's happened in Ottawa too. And even like, I wasn't there, but I saw like people getting arrested for peacefully protesting, you know? So
has that been happening consistently in Ottawa? In the solidarity protest there, because it's been happening sort of increasingly more in Toronto, and the Land Day protests, I believe, were the most violent. And I was at that, and people were kettled. Police are not supposed to kettle people. There was a lot that happened that day, and it was pretty violent. And a bunch of people had to go to the hospital, and some people got arrested. The truck got impounded. So I wasn't sure if that had just started happening, because in Toronto it seemed like for months that wasn't happening, and then at a point, I don't know if police were given different orders, but things started to change. I had a friend who was pushed down on the ground by the police as well, and she's actually has a rotator cuff injury now. She's been coming to the protest for a long time, for decades, so it's not the easiest for her to heal. Just as you get older, right, it's harder to heal. So when the police shoved her down on the ground, we went to the hospital with her. And yeah, and through, I had heard that the protests before that one had also been The police had been violent as well. And so it seems like in Toronto, there's this uptick in it. Like, it seemed like it had been building, but for many months, it hadn't really been like that. So I don't know if that is mirroring the reality in Ottawa, or in Ottawa, if it was, there was always some police violence. Like, could you speak to that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Definitely there is. I wouldn't say like as bad as Toronto. Like, people aren't getting trampled by horses and, you know, nobody's slashing tires, but it's still happening and it's still an issue that we need to talk about. And it's, yeah, like, have you seen anything like that too?
I haven't seen anything like as bad as Toronto, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But it's still clear that the police are still trying to silence like the protests.
Yeah. And there was, oh yeah, there was a time like they follow protesters like at the end. We always like protest at near the Human Rights Center, and there's an underground parking lot, and so everybody goes down. And some, when you're alone, there were times where a police officer will follow you if you're alone, being like, "Oh, you're doing a bad thing," and pretty much just like harassing you and putting you in a corner, and like multiple police officers doing so, and you're just kind of sitting there like, I don't know what could even like imagine like five police officers cornering you, being like, "Oh, you're doing something bad," blah blah blah, blah, and then ticketing you, and like it's ridiculous. Like, I have the right to protest as a human being and as a Canadian citizen. So that's happened. There were times where the police even blocked the parking lot. Like, they just, I don't know why. We can't leave. Like, you, like, I don't understand. Like, you're ticketing people for staying, for like blocking Ottawa, for blocking downtown, for staying there for too long, or even though we like, we're marching, we're not blocking anything.
We're just collecting donations on like on Parliament.
Yeah. So you don't have that.
Oh yeah, just police were literally giving out tickets for when like on Parliament ground, if you were collecting donations, they'd give you a ticket or they would tell you to, you know, get off.
Like, yeah. So there was that also happening.
And had you ever experienced that for any other protests? Like, have you seen that happen in any other protests? I don't know if you're going to a lot of other protests or hearing about them, but have you heard of anything like that happening for anything else? I know that you said that there's a marked difference in terms of the convoy and the fact that that they said they're not going to enforce the bylaw, the megaphone bylaw for the convoy. But had you ever heard of that when people were collecting donations for any other causes, that they were told to leave the grounds?
Personally, no, I haven't. Then again, I haven't been to many protests. I just started going to a lot of them this year because there was no way for me to like travel. You know, I have to take the bus, and like there was also quarantine and all that stuff. Like, I'm still 18, you know. so yeah, I just started going to a lot of them this year, but I haven't seen that much other than like I've heard a lot happen with the BLM movement, obviously, and it's been an issue in Ottawa too, and all over Canada. It's just that Canada is known to hide it better.
Right. What about you, Gareth? Have you ever had that happen before where you've been at another protest or at some other kind of event and been told to leave the Parliament grounds if you were protesting, or?
No, I haven't. I think it's very clear that there's an invested interest in silencing this protest, especially compared to some other ones like the convoy or the... There seems to be clear bias,
yeah,
to say the least.
And they want to compare us to convoy, even though we're nothing like them, because they blocked the like core of downtown for like a month while the protests that are happening now are literally just marches, and we're not staying in one place. We're walking around downtown, you know, and that's why I find it so weird. Like, why would you block the parking lot if you don't want us to stay in one place, or if you're accusing us for staying in one place and for blocking Ottawa? You know what I mean? like, you want us to stay longer? Okay, we'll stay longer then. Like,
oh, that makes a lot of, I mean, I can see how, yeah, there's marked differences between what the convoy setup was like and what these protests are like. Cause like they happen in Toronto too every week, but they don't, there hasn't been encampments or anything like that. There hasn't been people sort of staying there forever. So I mean, not that I've seen, you know.
Even if they did, like, they have the right, like, it's been happening for, like, what, 7 months? And not even just 7 months, for over 75 years. People are now doing encampments in, like, Columbia University. So there's another one happening, in Yale.
Yep.
Good for them. We should start doing that.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And the way that the police are responding to them compared to how they respond to, like, white supremacist groups, they let them stay there. They're like, okay, oh, you're blocking it? Yeah, it's your, like, have fun, you know? Like, there's a huge contrast.
For sure. No, for sure. I agree with that. Because the convoy, they were there for a really long time before they were, you know, forced to leave or whatever. So it is a huge difference. And I do shout out to all those folks at Columbia University in the encampments that they're being brave. And I think charting the way for others to mimic and to, and I think we can also take a lot of lessons from our Indigenous brothers and sisters who haven't had encampments in different places. And there was recently a success. There was some encampments in Winnipeg that had to do with trying to get funding to look in the landfills for some missing and murdered Indigenous women, like that families had been thinking were in, that their bodies may be there, and they wanted those places searched and the government and can work. And I think there's a way to do it where you're not blocking. Like, I think the way that the convoy did it was very different. It seems like it impacted so many people that were living there in a way that was negative, right? Like, and people couldn't, I think it was blocking stuff so people couldn't get through. I'm not sure that the encampment in Columbia at Columbia University is blocking anything.
I don't think so. I think they're just staying on campus grounds.
Right. Right. So I think there's something to think about for anyone listening to that might be involved in these struggles, that there's different ways to go about setting up an encampment, right? Like, there's different ways to go about it. And but I like the approach that Ottawa protesters seem to be taking to not be paying the tickets and trying to fight these bylaw tickets, because it seems like it's really, it seems like it's impacting our ability for free speech. And that's impacting their ability to protest, because if you feel like you're going to get a ticket for $500 every time, and every other cause can use a megaphone, and you were using a megaphone in the past, right? Like, I've been going to protests for decades. People always use megaphones. So
yeah, why,
like,
the
I
whole
mean,
point.
Ever since I remember going to a protest, like, probably, I don't know, I'm old, so a long time ago, like decades and decades ago, right? Like, at any climate protest, there's a megaphone. At any protest I think I've ever been to in my life, there's megaphones. It just kind of goes with it. So to all of a sudden make up this sort of arbitrary bylaw and be enforcing it by, you know, issuing $500 tickets, like, that's something. It's $500 is a chunk of cash, right? So, but it's nice to also see in your film, I think you really bring to life, both of you bring to life, the resistance to that and the movement sort of around that to raise this money for people to fight the tickets, right? Which is really cool. So just getting back to the documentary now, if you could talk a little bit about the protester, and, like, I know you said how you met her, but I felt like watching the documentary, and for those of you who haven't seen it yet, and you're going to see it on Friday, you're in for a treat. It's really good. I think it really hones in on some important, really humanizing moments in this struggle that we really need. Because right now, you know, there's a lot of months of feeling like, where is humanity? You know, in the midst of the genocide that's being perpetrated, and that the whole world seems to be watching from, you know, from live streams and stuff like that. So could you just talk a little bit about the message of the protester in the documentary, and maybe why you decided to focus on that?
Yeah, like I said, uh, I Like, I'm not painting, you know, anyone as a hero because they're not heroes. They're doing something that is a necessity. It's something that it's they essentially need to do, you know. One of the people told me, like, the politics don't, you don't choose the politics choose you. And it's, even their existence is political. Their whole life is political. So it's something that they have to fight for. So, you know, I wanted to really humanize them, especially because the media hasn't been doing that. The media has been demonizing them. And I think Tara was a very good character. You know, you really see that she's doing it because the community did save her. The Palestinian or activist community is always there for her. And I saw how she interacted with different people and how she knows everybody's names and how she'll give everybody hugs. And I was like, this is, and the more I started going to this protest, I felt the same way too. And I knew, actually, like, I knew that there was a community, but, like, the more I started editing the documentary, the less I started going because I didn't have enough time and there was finals. And I was like, I need to go again. Like, I miss these people. They're like my second family now. You know, it's such a beautiful family, and I really do miss them, and I can't wait to see them again this weekend, because it's like, these people are just so amazing, you know?
She really was like the perfect representation of like what that community is, yeah. And like how welcoming and like just kind of caring these people are. Because at the end of the day, you're going to do these protests because you care, and because you care about people.
Mm-hmm. That's so great. Yeah, I was really moved by the scenes of the protester, and it made me think about how great it is when you're there and feeling that you're with all these other people that actually do really care. And that means something, right? It's great to have them, and it's great to be doing that every week, and to see the commitment and dedication of people showing up every week and sort of channeling their energy towards that and doing that as a group and chanting in the streets. I think it really does help in these times of struggle and times when, you know, you feel like every day is like a day of doom and gloom because of what's going on and that there's so many people being massacred every day, right? So, and then with the anonymous organizer, so there's a fear that they could lose their job if their identity is known, but yet they seem quite steadfast in like the work that they're doing, because they said, I think in the clips with them, they're talking about how they've worked to help other groups in the past. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you got to meet them through another organization. Is that right? That's what you said in the beginning of this interview.
What I said, like, I reached out to Anek Bayan because I wanted to originally make the documentary about various organizations. But then I was like, oh, maybe I'll do like something about like Palestinian organizations. And so they told me that they work with Palestinian organizations, they work together, and they help amplify Palestinian voices, because Anek Bayan is a Filipino organization, and what's happening in the Philippines is essentially the same thing. They are also dealing with struggles of imperialism from Canada and from the U.S. And so One of the things that the anonymous organizer told me is that a blow to imperialism anywhere is a blow to imperialism everywhere. You know, Palestine isn't free until everybody is free. So they work together because they know their struggle, really.
I love that quote. It is true. Mm-hmm. It is true. And we do really need to work against imperialism because it is such a force, and it does have, it just swallows people up, right? Into, for whatever reasons. And there's a lot of other things I think that go along with that, like the military industrial complex. And, you know, like so many of the weapons that are being used on Palestinians that are basically have been being tested on Gazans over the years. There's a book I've been reading, and I'll just say this now, because anyone that's listening, if you get a chance to check out this book, it's called The Palestine Laboratory by Anthony Lowenstein, and it talks all about this weapons industry and the quadcopters, the drones, and all these things, and AI has been used also with them. There's some really interesting articles, and now I'll give a shout out to the Israeli journalist Yuval Abraham at +972 that's been writing about Lavender, which is a program that's AI based, and it's with the drones. And it's really scary because it's the indiscriminate killing of so many people because of the way that he explains a lot in the piece. So if people have time to check that out. But it's basically just talking about the weapons industry. So when we're thinking of imperialism and we're thinking about this military-industrial complex, we also have to think about how this impacts the relationships with other countries. And why is it that so many countries in the Middle East aren't actually taking a stand, like the Houthis are doing stuff in Yemen? And, you know, you have Lebanon and Hezbollah, and then, you know, you have Iran. But like there's a lot of other countries, and then Qatar has been doing a lot of work in terms of negotiating the talks. Like when there was a ceasefire, the Qataris were negotiating that. And Qatar also pays for Al Jazeera, and Al Jazeera has been doing a lot of footage and a lot of covering really what's going on in Gaza. But there's a lot of other countries that are not really doing enough, or they might be paying lip service to saying that they're against the genocide. But when it comes down to it, I couldn't really understand why they weren't doing anything. When I heard an interview with Anthony Lowenstein talking about that, it really gives some perspective, because it just talks about how many of these countries are importing these same weapons to control their populations. And so when we're talking about imperialism and we're talking about these weapons and just how lethal they are, you know, just the amount of Palestinians killed in such a short amount of time is unprecedented. And it's because of these weapons and these arms. And a lot of them are coming from America. So the United States is implicated, obviously, in many other countries, you know.
So was Canada here in Ottawa, too.
And exactly. In Canada, we have pushed, there was that NDP bill, right, that was pushed in Parliament. And then the Liberals changed a lot of the wording in it. So it was very watered down. But that was essentially for the arms embargo, right? And so then you have Melanie Joly, right, coming out and saying that the agreements that are in place, or the agreements that were in place for the arms that are already going, those are staying in place, but there's not going to be new ones issued. And so it was just very sad, because we thought, great, we're not sending any more arms to Israel as Canada, right? Because Canada, Germany, France, there's so many countries, Turkey, I'm in Turkey while we're talking right now, in Istanbul. And there was a huge uproar here with citizens protesting their government and not voting for Erdogan in many different areas, to protest that steel was going from Turkey to Israel, and that was being used in the gates and the barricades in Al-Aqsa and lots of other places. And so there's so many countries that are involved in this, right? And when you start looking at that and looking at wondering why aren't these countries doing more, and then you see, oh, well, there's this money factor. Oh, well, they're getting these weapons. Like India is the biggest buyer, biggest purchaser of these weapons, and they're using it against Kashmiri Muslims, right? And against different populations, and people like Modi, right, who's another person who's a fascist in power in India, doing the same kind of thing. So I think they're onto something, and I like that you took that quote and ran with it about imperialism. It is. It's really important to think of it like that, because these struggles are similar. There's obviously differences. Each one has its own history. We know with Palestine, the history goes far back, even before 1948, right? We know that in the Nakba, pre-Nakba, there were many villages that were depopulated even before 1948, right? The campaign started before, and there's that book by Ilan Pape called The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine that was released in 2012, and that was when some documents were declassified from the Israeli military. And then and Ilan Pape, Israeli historian, got kicked out of Haifa University, where he was a professor, because of the position that he was taking. But this is all documented, so I think that's right on. And getting back to the documentary, is there anything that you really wanted to include but you couldn't because of the time constraints?
So much. So much. You have no idea. You have no idea. There is so much. Like that quote that I said, like the anonymous organizer said it, but I couldn't fit it anywhere. I couldn't fit it anywhere. Oh my God. Like,
he said so many good things, so many good quotes.
Talk about national democracy. They talk about imperialism. They talk about so much. They talk about the Philippines. They talk about Turtle Island, you know, Canada. They talk about Palestine. Like oh my God, you have no idea. I love how you asked this question, because this is like, that was my biggest struggle. Because cutting it was just so hard. Like, I could make a director's cut and it would be an hour long. Like, You have no idea.
So do you think you will? Like, do you think you will do something like that?
Oh man, maybe.
I think you should. Like, I think you should. I think you should. All those things you just talked about sound really, really interesting. And those connections, right? Turtle Island to Palestine, right? Like those connections are really important. I think more people living in so-called Canada need to hear about those connections.
Yeah. And like you talked about weapons, and there's actually going to be a protest in like end of May, because every year, like they're called CADC, and they're like an arms trade center in Ottawa, and they give arms to Israel. And so they have like this event every May, and they're going to, of course, protest against that. And they do that every year. They do the protest. And they also had a blockade there in February at CADC. And I mean, like, how I know here in Ottawa, they're giving it to Israel. Like, that, like, we can do something about it here. We can keep blocking it and keep protesting against that, because that's ridiculous. Like, nobody knows.
And when does that happen again? Let's do a plug for that.
Like, I think May 29, like May 30th, something like that. I don't know the exact date. Like, they're still organizing it. But it's end of May for sure.
Okay, well, we can keep in touch, and maybe we can put something up on our Prison Radio Show Twitter feed.
Yeah, they're all like, they post all about it on Instagram, like the Palestinian Youth Movement, Ottawa for Palestine, Independent Jewish Voices, Labor for Palestine, like all these organizations here in Ottawa. They all post about it, and it's all on Instagram, really.
That's great. So to any of our listeners, if you want to know more about what our documentary filmmakers are talking about, what they're saying is coming up at the end of May in Ottawa, please check out PIM, the Palestinian Youth Movement Instagram, or any of their socials. And is it Ottawa for Palestine?
There's Ottawa for Palestine, then there's Palestinian Youth Movement, Labor for Palestine, Independent Jewish Voices. There's a lot, honestly, like, but those are like kind of like the main ones that really helped me with the documentary as well.
Perfect. And so, yeah, like everyone that's listening, if you can, I know for those of you inside, this isn't possible, not possible for you to attend this, but for those of you on the outside, if you can check out any of the social media sites that our guests are listing and talking about, and check that out to see if for this action that's going to be coming up in Ottawa, that sounds really important. And something that everyone here at Prison Radio would want to support. And anything else that you guys want to talk about in terms of the documentary? We have just a little bit of time left. Was it your first time? Was it your first time making something? Making a documentary?
Sorry?
Was it your first documentary?
Yeah, it was all our first time. So it was a weird, like, what's it called? Process.
It was a fun process too, just meeting everybody, meeting the kind of community. It felt really good to be helping or being part of like just the protests, and to be making something that's so important. Even if it's just making a small difference, it's still nice to feel that you're making a difference.
That's great.
Because we shouldn't be feeling hopeless. You have to do something.
That's right. That's right. Exactly right. You got to channel that energy and all that grief and that heaviness into something, right? So that you don't feel hopelessness. That's exactly right. And then how did the relationship with PBS, does the school have a relationship with PBS? Is that how?
So every year, like when in the film program, they do these documentaries, like it's part of our term, and it's part of our education. And so PBS kind of gives us that platform. And gives Algonquin students a platform. So what we do is that we spend like a couple weeks doing our research, trying to think of an idea. We pitch it to professors. The professors then pick the documentaries out of all the students. We had like maybe 20 students. Usually it's around 50 or something. They pick about 5 documentaries out of all the other students, and then you produce it for 2 to 3 months. And then it gets aired on PBS. That's it.
That's great. So they picked yours out of 50? That's amazing.
I think it was about 30, 20, something like that.
That's amazing. Well, congrats from Prison Radio
Thank
Show.
You. Congrats to Sarah too, is documentary got picked.
Yeah, to both of you. To when I say you, I mean plural, and also to the third person who's in your crew who we haven't forgotten about, but who just couldn't make it for the interview today. So I just wanted to say thank you to both of you for coming on Prison Radio Show. It's been a pleasure talking with you today. And hopefully you'll have a director's cut or some other project that you're both working on, and you can come back on and talk to us about it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to stop making videos. We're going to keep showing up. So yeah, it's all going to be on our Instagrams and things like that.
Maybe your next one can be about mass incarceration of Palestinians in Israeli prisons.
That should, that honestly should be talked about. Yeah.
Okay, cool. There's a lot to talk about. There's a lot going on. But so thank you both. Thank you, Garrett. Thank you, Rama. And thanks to the third person. I forget her name.
Isha Pritchett.
Isha Pritchett, shout out to you. And sorry that you couldn't be here, but this has been great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for tuning in. If you're just tuning in, you've been listening to Prison Radio Show on CKT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT FM, ckut.ca. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. You can check out past episodes of the Prison Radio Show at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Prison Radio Show. And Prison Radio Show is also a podcast, so you might even be listening to this as a podcast. Check out our episodes of PRS Podcast on Libsyn or anywhere that you like to get your podcasts. The next Prison Radio Show is going to air on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved in the show, please feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. If you are in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. Feel free to write to us at Prison Radio Show or simply write PRS. Care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. Thank you for tuning in to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Yasmin, and I've been your host for today. Please stay tuned.
On October 13th, 2023, the CAC government announced its plan to double the tuition fees for Art of Provence and international students at English language universities in Quebec. Since this announcement, students have mobilized at universities across the city of Montreal, with over 20,000 students from Concordia and McGill walking out of classes in early March. These mobilizations mark an important step in the ongoing movement against these tuition hikes. But what comes next? And what can we learn from the history of the student movement in Quebec? The Bethune Club of the PCQ-CPC invites you to a night of discussions about these hikes and the broader struggles against austerity and for free education in Quebec. Speakers from the Anti-Tuition Hike Committee at Concordia, the Association of Graduate Students Employed at McGill, the Association of McGill University Support Employees, and the Communist Party of Quebec will be followed by a screening of Carré Rouge sur Fond Noir, a documentary chronicling the 2012 student strikes. Join us on Thursday, April 25th at 6:30 p.m. at the Association of Greek Workers of Quebec, 5359 Avenue du Parc. The event will be free and open to all. For more information, contact bethune.club.pcq@gmail.com.
Help us spread the word. CKUT is looking for someone to join our team as the chair of the board of directors. Our board of directors reads the fine print, approves the annual budget, engages in community outreach, and keeps CKUT's eye on the bigger picture. The board meets for 2 hours every month, and the chair circulates agendas, keeps meetings organized, and acts as a liaison between the outside world and the board. If you're passionate about the station, this is an opportunity to help lead CKUT into a new era of community media. For more information, please send a message to admin@ckut.ca.
Le film Carnaval raconte l'histoire d'un jeune garçon qui est arraché de son île
Monsieur le Carnaval.
Et déposé sur cette planète très étrange appelée Canada.
On oublie tout et on recommence.
Il s'agit d'immigration, oui, mais il s'agit surtout de garder son cœur, son âme et sa culture au plus profond de soi, malgré les douleurs que peut provoquer ce déplacement soudain.
S'il te plaît, mamie, je vais aller au Carnaval avec toi.
On vous invite à venir voir Carnaval, un film d'Henri Pardo, au cinéma dès le 3 mai.
Get ready! The legendary Barris Hammond returns! Saturday, July 27th, inside L'Olympia Concert Hall, downtown Montreal. This is an early evening show, so bring your mother, auntie, sister, and granny. We're all going to see Uncle Barris. When you're wrapped up in my arms. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. Early bird tickets on sale now at BarrisHammondMontreal.com. Barris Hammond, Saturday, July 27th, live in Montreal.
Production Nuit d'Afrique invites you to the gala of the 17th edition of Nuit d'Or de la Musique du Monde. See you on Tuesday, April 25th at La Tulipe from 8 p.m. onwards. Come out and support your favorite artists to help them win the Cili d'Or, d'Argent, and des Bronzes. Le Cili d'Or de la Musique du Monde is a celebration that brings the cultures of the world together. For more information, visit cilidor.com.
Other Worlds on Earth is a radio show of unapologetic romanticism and utopian yearning for people with unlimited vision. What worlds? Other ones. Other than what? Other than the one you're familiar with. Where? On Earth, where we live. Expect deep dives into counterculture, counterhistory, altered states, ethnobotany, radical anthropology, esoteric explorations, and other worlds on Earth. Tune in to CKUT 90.3 FM every first Thursday of the month at 8 p.m. or visit ckut.ca and search for Other Worlds on Earth to listen to the archives.
Week on
Trapped in a Field.
Actually, if it were authentic, the diameter of the Vortal Crabel Circular would be the exact...
I know, Amy. And I hate to interrupt, but do you know where we're going?
Not really. I'm just following that strange sound.
Yeah, what is that?
I think it's coming through our tinfoil hats.
Right. It must be a radio signal.
Tim and Amy come upon a radio in the middle of a crop circle, in the middle of a field. Celestial alien wavebenders boosting signal? No, it must be
CKUT. I think we can use this to communicate with the alien overship.
Let me see that.
This is just a radio after all.
Wait! I was so distracted by those sounds, I don't even know where we are.
Oh no. Are we trapped in a field?
They are.
At least we have the radio.
Thank Morzak for CKUT.
Be sure to tune in this week for the dramatic conclusion of
Trapped in...
This is Monica Passos for CKUT.
Stop putting your TV set on, please.
Bye-bye.
What's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. I'm your host for the evening, Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Life, celebrate life, celebrate life. Bubble to the max, everything well, cool and relaxed. So we send out the location, they are pass spot. We are pop champagne non-stop, yeah. Happy birthday, yeah, my friend. Yeah. One more year upon them. Yeah. Go on, a vibe, give thanks for life. Next year we're doing it again. Yeah, yeah.